The following is a recording for Carla Garcia Baccalini of Credicorp on Tuesday, February 9th, 2016 at 8:30 a.m. Central Time. Excuse me, everyone. We now have our speakers in conference. Please be aware that each of your lines is in a listen-only mode. At the conclusion of today's presentation, we will open the floor for questions. At that time, instructions will be given if you would like to ask a question. I would now like to turn the call over to Mr. Fernando Dasso. Mr. Dasso, you may begin.
Good morning and welcome to Credicorp conference call on our earnings results for the fourth quarter of 2015. For the fourth consecutive quarter, Credicorp posted a solid result with net income of 731 million soles, which led to an ROE and ROA of 18.7 and 1.9 respectively. After excluding the effect of non-recurring net expenses for 38.4 million, the result translates into net recurring income of 769.6 million and recurring ROE and ROA of 19.8 and 2.0% respectively. The main drivers of Credicorp's results were, first, loan expansion of 2.8% quarter over quarter and 13.1% year over year in quarter end balances, which, excluding the effect of the revaluation of the U.S. dollar, turned into real loan growth of 0.5% quarter-over-quarter and 7.4% year-over-year. However, it is important to note that average daily balances reveal a much better performance of our loan book and show an expansion of 4.8% quarter-over-quarter and 16.8% year-over-year, which represents real growth in line with expectations of 3.1% Q-over-Q and 11.6% year-over-year. Second, an increase of 13.1% quarter-over-quarter and 14.9% year-over-year in net provisions for loan losses. This led to a cost of risk of 2.23%, which represented an increase of 21 basis points Q-over-Q and only 4 basis points year-over-year. Third, significant net increase, net interest income growth of 5.8% quarter-over-quarter and 15.4% year-over-year, which more than compensated the increase in provisions for loan losses. This result was mainly due to higher interest income on loans and represented the highest quarterly growth rate in 2015. Four, a solid NIM of 5.55%, which represented an increase of 6 basis points Q-over-Q. This was attributable to significant growth in net interest income, the highest quarterly level this year, and a lower increase in average interest-earning assets, which was due to a decrease in BCRP funding. On a year-over-year basis, NIM fell 11 basis points. This was primarily due to more use of BCRP instruments and to an increase in funding costs, as we will explain later. Fifth, although the efficiency ratio increased 140 basis points quarter over quarter, it decreased 180 basis points year over year. This was well in line with expectations and the result of BCP's efficiency problem. Let's review the profitability by subsidiaries. The next slide, please. Credicorp's solid performance reflects relatively stable or normalized ROEs at the main subsidiaries, as shown in the table. Nevertheless, subsidiaries such as Credicorp Capital and Atlantic Security Bank posted negative and very low ROEs, respectively. The former reflects the impact of an impairment related to the acquisition of the Chilean business, and the latter shows the effect of a deteriorated and volatile asset management business, one of ASB's core business lines. Let's review the most important drivers of Credicorp performance. Next slide, please. The graph on this slide shows the evolution of Credicorp's total loans in average daily balance, which best reflects interest income generation. Loan book expanded 4.8% Q over Q and 16.8% year-over-year. All of these represented real growth of 3.1% Q-over-Q and 9.6% year-over-year. In general, the dynamic of past quarters changed even the retail banking, that retail banking accounted for the highest share of nominal and real growth in average daily balances, which differs from the scenario observed in previous quarters, throughout 2015, when wholesale banking led loan growth. In the year-over-year evolution by business segments, the dynamic remained unchanged as wholesale banking continued to lead loan growth. It is important to note that Mibanco reported loan expansion for the second consecutive quarter, which reflects ongoing recovery in loan origination after the bank's acquisition and the subsequent cleanup process. Nevertheless, it is important to remember that the speed of origination is still below this segment's potential, which reflects the bank's focus on prioritizing portfolio quality over speeding up the pace of loan growth because of the current macro context. Next slide, please. The year-over-year analysis offers a better snapshot of the de-dollarization process underway and of the nature and control risk of Credicorp's foreign currency loan book. In the chart at the top of the slide, it is clear that segments with higher dollarization have also de-dollarized the most. This is the case of wholesale banking, SME business, and mortgage portfolios, which we believe have now levels of dollarization that do not represent material exchange risk. In the particular case of the mortgage portfolio, it is important to note that the foreign currency stock has a very low loan-to-value of approximately 50%, which is lower than the portfolio average of 56%. With regards to the central bank's de-dollarization plan, it is important to highlight that at the end of December, ECB standalone had fully complied with December's targets in both total foreign currency loan book and foreign currency mortgage and car loan book. All of the aforementioned is reflected in the sensitivity analysis of ECB's loan book, which is shown in the chart at the bottom right. As of December 2015, in a stress scenario with an exchange rate shock, 88% of ECB's loan book posted no exposure to foreign exchange risk on credit risk. This percentage continues to increase as the de-dollarization level falls. Next slide, please. The chart at the top of this slide shows the evolution of Credicorp funding structures. It is evident that in 2015, BTRP instruments share of total funding increased due to improvements in their conditions, particularly in terms of tenure, which allowed us to strengthen Credicorp's long-term funding. Nevertheless, it is important to note that for the first quarter, the share of BTRP instruments in total funding contracted from 8.7% at the end of September to 6% at the end of 2015. In terms of funding cost, in the table at the bottom left, you can see that the funding cost at Credicorp and BCP standalone increased for the second consecutive quarter by 4 basis points, Q over Q. Q over year, the increase was 10 basis points at Credicorp and 9 basis points at BCP standalone. This growth was both gradual and in line with expectations. For the full year 2015, ECP's funding cost increased 8 basis points, but Credicorp's cost grew only 3 basis due to the optimization of Mibanco's funding. The funding cost dropped 9 basis points. Finally, with regards to a loan-to-deposit ratio, in the table at the bottom right, we can see that Credicorp's ratio fell 190 bps Q-over-Q and 380 bps year-over-year. The same trend was seen at the banking subsidiaries, BCP standalone and Mibanco. The improvement in the loan-to-deposit ratio is mainly explained by, first, the growth rate of deposits outpaced that of loans in terms of Q-over-Q of quarter-end balances. It is important to note that wholesale banking loans posted significant cancellation levels toward the end of the quarter. Second, the effect of high appreciation of the U.S. dollar in the fourth quarter. This led deposits to expand more than loans because the realization is higher in the former than in the latter. Nevertheless, even after eliminating the effect of the appreciation of the U.S. dollar, the loan-to-deposit ratio fell 80 basis points Q over Q, 120 basis points year over year. Given the market's concerns about local currency liquidity and the funding cost, as well as the central bank's participation as a funding supplier, let's quickly review some aspects of the funding structure at BCP, the subsidiary that is the most exposed to these factors. Next slide. The chart at the top of this slide shows the breakdown of BCP's funding by funding source and tenure. As you can see in the chart on top left, deposits still represent the largest funding source, but its share in the total local currency funding was 68% at the end of December. The chart on the top right shows the strengthened long-term funding position due to more use of BCP instruments throughout 2015. If we analyze in more detail BCP's local currency funding, the chart at the bottom of this slide shows the breakdown of BCP's funding by source and the average cost of the most important sources. It is noteworthy, first, in the pie chart on the left, it is important to highlight the high share of deposits. Moreover, BCP instruments represent 21% of total local currency funding and replace mainly other funding sources such as due to banks and bonds. Second, in the table on the right, you can see that the only funding sources with higher costs in 2015 were deposits and BCRP instruments. Moreover, the latter posted a larger increase of 9 basis points as compared to December 2014's cost. The former posted an increase in its cost of only 4 basis in 2015. Finally, in the same table, it is important to note that the cost of total deposits dropped 5 basis in 2015 because the lower cost of foreign currency deposits offset the higher cost of local currency deposits. Next slide, please. Credicorp's net interest income increased 5.8% year-over-year and 15.4% year-over-year. This was due primarily to growth in interest income on loans. The chart on the top left shows that the net interest margin increased 6 basis points quarter over quarter to situate at 5.55% at year-end. Year over year, NIM dropped 11 basis points. NIM on loans increased 16 basis points quarter over quarter, but dropped 27 basis points year over year, which reflects a change in the mix of loan book towards a higher share of low-margin business segments throughout 2015. NIM after provisions for loan losses dropped 5 basis year-over-year and 7 basis year-over-year due to a slightly higher pace of growth in provisions this quarter. This level is within expectations and in line with our risk appetite. Thus, the increase of NIM is explained by, first, the level of BCRP instruments fell Q over Q, which helped reduce the distortion created in interest-earning assets, which expand due to the required restricted deposits. And second, higher margin business segments led the expansion of total loans in the fourth quarter. The effect of these two factors was slightly diluted by the small increase in funding costs. The first element has a material effect, as is shown in the chart at the top right. As you can see in the graph, the adjusted NIM, which eliminates the amount of restricted deposits required in the central bank's repo trade from interest-earning assets, increased 5 basis points year-over-year, 21 basis points year-over-year, and 14 basis points in 2015. More than giving the precise estimated figure, this adjusted NIM gives a clear idea of the most important drivers of the slight reduction in lemon. Next slide, please. Net provisions for loan losses increased 13.1% Q over Q to 14.9% year over year. But the cost of risk remained within expectations, and more importantly, within our risk capital. The cost of risk may have increased 21 bps quarter over quarter, but in full year terms fell from 2.15% in 2014 to 2.08% in 2015. Due to continuous improvement in the risk quality of new vintages in retail banking in general and in the SME, PYME, credit card, consumer, and mortgages in particular, as we will see later on. Traditional delinquency ratios, such as the internal overdue and NPL ratios, remain fairly stable year over year, but showed a slight increase year over year. Nevertheless, it is important to remember that these ratios are impacted by the distortion created due to the stock of loans that are provisioned but cannot be written off because of the existence of real estate collateral. This is a situation that characterizes mainly business segments such as SME business, SME PYME, and mortgage portfolio. Next slide, please. The chart on this slide shows improvement in the internal overdue ratios at each of BCP's different segments, as well as at Mibanco, due to the aforementioned factors. The drop in the internal overdue ratio of SME PYME, Mibanco, and BCP Bolivia is particularly noteworthy. In the SME business segment, the deterioration shown in the delinquency ratio is attributable to two particular cases and a higher level of refinance loans. The clients in question experienced deterioration in their payment capacities due to poor sales performance on projects that were not related to their core business. For businesses such as SME PYME, mortgage, credit card, and consumer segments, the most appropriate delinquency analysis entails looking at the early delinquency ratios, which we will see in the next slide. Next slide, please. In this slide, we can see the evolution of the early delinquency ratio, which is highly correlated with the cost of risk in businesses such as SME PYME, mortgage, consumer, and credit cards. It is also important to remember that the year-over-year analysis is the most appropriate way of looking at this scenario, particularly in terms of SME PYME, consumer, and credit cards, because it eliminates the effect of the seasonality that characterizes this business. In the case of SME PYME, early delinquency has followed a consistent downward trend year over year in 2015. Thus, the cost of risk also improved consistently throughout the year. This represents a great achievement because it reflects the comprehensive adjustment we have made in our business model over the past 2 years. In the mortgage book, yearly delinquency ratio remains low at around 2.8%, plus or minus 10 bps. It is also evident that this ratio registers a degree of volatility but remains within the organization's risk appetite. The cost of risk in this segment increased 35 bps Q over Q. This increase was due to, first, the maturity cycle of the Mi Vivienda portfolio, which continues to account for approximately 15% of total mortgage loans. Second, an operating error in the booking of provisions for the Mi Vivienda program, which will be reversed next quarter. Thus, the adjusted cost of risk should be situated at 0.73%. Third, a slight deterioration of risk quality and vintages on foreign currency mortgages, which were issued just before the SOL started its devaluation trend. And fourth and last, we identified deterioration in some clients' capacity to make payments to other financial entities and had to build provisions accordingly. in the consumer and credit card segment after falling consistently in the first three quarters of 2015 on a year-over-year basis, yearly delinquency indicator increased 13 and 15 bps year-over-year respectively in the fourth quarter. Nevertheless, and in particular in the credit card segment, all delinquency and profitability indicators are comfortably within our risk appetite. We are closely monitoring these events to make sure that we implement all measures to control the situation. Next slide, please. Mibanco's internal overdue ratio fell 66 basis points Q/Q. This was mainly attributable to a contraction of the internal overdue portfolio, which was attributable to efforts to clean up this portfolio as well as to charge-offs. The cost of risk increased 34 bps due to a high level of write-offs last quarter, which led to an atypical return for the cost of risk. In the year-over-year analysis, Mibanco continues to post improvement and show stability, which is reflected in the 134 bps decline year-over-year in the cost of risk. Next slide, please. Non-financial income grew Q/Q. This was due primarily to an increase in fee income and in net gain on foreign exchange transactions, and to a lesser extent, the non-recurrent income added to cost. The aforementioned offset, the loss on sales of securities and the loss from subsidiaries, which is mainly linked to a cost adjustment of 10 million soles at Grupo Pacífico. In a year-over-year and annual accumulated terms, non-financial income reported an increase of 9.5% and 8.7% respectively due to higher gains from foreign exchange transactions and to an increase in fee income, which are the main sources of non-financial income. Next slide, please. The insurance underwriting result increased 7.3% Q/Q. This was due primarily to a drop in acquisition costs and to a slight increase in net premiums, property and casualty, and to a lesser extent, to a decrease in the acquisition costs in life insurance. The aforementioned mitigated an increase in property and casualty claims. In the year-over-year analysis, it is important to remember that the results incorporate the period-end effect of the joint venture with America. Nevertheless, the underwriting result increased 29.2%. This was due primarily to a decrease in the level of claims the fourth quarter and to a drop in the acquisition cost, which offset a decline in the net earned premium related to the JV. With regards to the main insurance ratios, it is important to highlight that the combined ratio of property and casualty fell from 100.2% and 92.2% in the fourth quarter of 2014 and the third quarter of 2015, respectively, 56.4% in the last fourth quarter. Moreover, those ratio also dropped from 55.1% and 60.4% in the fourth quarter of 2014 and the third quarter of 2015, respectively, 59.7% in this last fourth quarter. Next slide, please. The efficiency ratio increased quarter over quarter, which is mainly due to the seasonality that characterizes the fourth quarter of every year. Nevertheless, the efficiency program showed positive results, which were reflected in the reduction of 180 basis points year over year and 200 basis points in accumulated terms. Next slide, please. Credicorp and its subsidiaries have maintained comfortable capitalization ratios that are well above regulatory limits. The Common Equity Tier 1 ratio, which is the most rigorous measure of capitalization, registered a significant Q/Q improvement of 33 basis points. This was mainly due to earnings generation. As a result, in 2015, we managed to raise the ratio from 8.01% at the end of 2014 to 9.34% at the year-end. The main drivers behind this were, first and most importantly, earnings generation. Second, the transfer of BCI equity investment to credit cards. And third, a correction in our methodology after having erroneously deducted deferred taxes related to the flat tax of our leasing business. Now, let's review credit card results for the full year 2015. Next slide, please. In 2015, credit card posted record high earnings, which outpaced expectations. These results clearly reflect credit card's solid position, which allowed the organization to deliver extraordinary results despite low economic growth in Peru and volatility in the international market. Net income reached a solid $3,092.3 million, which led to an ROE of 20.5% and to an ROA of 2.1%. After excluding the effect of non-recurring net income of $141 million, the result translates into net recurring income of solid $2,950 million. This represents solid recurring ROE and ROA 19.7% and 2.0% respectively. In the chart on this slide, you can see the annual contribution of all subsidiaries, as well as the ROEs and recurring ROEs. It is noteworthy the better performance of BCP, Mibanco, Pacifico, and Prima. Even more when we see the recurring ROEs, which have improved dramatically in 2015. Profitability reduced in Credicorp Capital and Santi Security Bank due to the volatility and deterioration of international markets, whose business segments are linked to. Next slide, please. The resilience of Credicorp businesses is clearly reflected in our achievements, which were well in line with our guidance and did not change even when the local and international markets became more difficult to maneuver in 2015. First, loans expanded 13.1% in period-end balances and 16.8% in average daily balances. Second, cost of risk dropped 7 bps. Third, the funding cost was very well controlled, and consequently increased only 3 basis points. Fourth, as expected, NIM reached 5.60%. This represents a slight contraction of 8 bps. Fifth, NIM after provisions expanded 3 basis points. Sixth, efficiency ratio dropped 200 basis points, which was even better than we had expected. Seventh, Common Equity Tier 1 ratio was situated at 9.34%, which is already very close to our target of 10% by the end of 2016. Eighth, internal overdue and NPL ratios increased only 5 and 8 basis points respectively, although no guidance has been given to the market due to a distortion caused by the presence of collateral in some business segments. It's important to mention that these ratios are not showing the control and improvement in some businesses, such as SME PYME and Mibanco. All the above translated into a recurring ROE 19.7%, which was close to our 20% target. With these comments, I would like to open the Q&A session. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. At this time, we will open the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the one key. That is star one on your touchtone phone now. Questions will be taken in the order in which they are received. If at any time you would like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, just press star two. Again, that is star one if you would like to ask a question. Our first question comes from Tito Labarda from Deutsche Bank.
Hi, good morning, Fernando. Thanks for the call. There's a couple of questions. First, in terms of asset quality and provisions, we saw nice improvements in terms of NPLs, but you did see a pickup in provisions. You mentioned, I think, there's some additional provisions for a particular corporate. Also, credit card provisions were a bit higher. But I guess you want to get expectations going forward with still somewhat slow growth. How do you see asset quality evolving in 2016, and also, you know, how should we think about the cost of risk, and given it was a bit elevated, I think this quarter, does that come down back closer to the 2% of loans for this year? If you can, you know, maybe give some guidance on that. And then also, just any impact from El Nino that you're seeing, I guess, in the first quarter, and any potential impact on asset quality because of that. And then second question, in terms of margins, also saw, you know, a bit of an improvement this quarter. You know, if you could maybe give some color for your expectations for this year, you know, given, you know, what you're expecting for loan growth in the different segments, retail versus corporate, and also your funding costs this year. So how do you see your net interest margin evolving this year? Can that improve further, or does that remain relatively stable? If you can give some color on that as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Tito. First, I want to address your first question in terms of asset quality. We feel that until now, the Nino is still on a very moderate stance. It will probably stay as it is, although it's raining a little bit in the northern region. But until now, nothing special has happened. Of course, we have prepared our projections. You know, with two scenarios, our basic scenario is a moderate one, and the other scenario is a different one with a severe Nino, which could affect our loan quality. Until now, we feel that we are running under the moderate one and don't seem to feel that nothing special will happen in terms of loan quality. It will probably stay as it is. That with regard to the Nino. However, as you have seen in the numbers for the last quarter, Peru is in a way slowing a little bit economically, and that subdued economy would affect a little bit, especially in our consumer portfolio. However, until now, we are very well under our appetite, our risk appetite, and don't seem to be noting anything special with a portfolio. Then in terms of the expectations for the NIM and loan growth, we feel that this is a very particular year because of what we talked about, the Nino, because we have elections, the first one in April and the second in June. So that will bring some stability to the country, but we feel that last year we have probably grown by 2.8%, and this year you'll probably be around 3. So if the country continues to grow by this in this particular pace, we feel that our loan portfolio will really resemble, the growth of the portfolio will resemble the one we had last year, which will be around, say, 13-15%. If this happens, we don't see any particular pressure on our margins. This is a very safe pace of growth, both in terms of, you know, risk, but also in terms of competition. There will be room for everyone to continue growing, and we don't seem to feel a special pressure on our margins, so they will probably stay where they are right now.
All right, thanks. That's helpful. Just a follow-up, in terms of the cost of risk for this year and the asset quality, I guess, just from your comments, is it safe to say, you know, you could see some modest deterioration just given the slowing economy and impact on the consumer portfolio, but in general, relatively stable, so stable to slight deterioration in NPLs, and what does that imply for your cost of risk for this year?
Cost of risk will probably stay between 2 and 2.2%. Last quarter was a little bit higher than that 2.2 guidance we give all the time. Yes, there has been some deterioration, but we are pretty confident that all the measures that we have been taking during the past months, especially in SME and the consumer arena, let us continue to be into that comfortable 2 to 2.2% cost of risk.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Raul Martinez from JP Morgan.
Hi. Good morning, it's Saul. I have two questions. I've been worried about the LDR, especially in the local currency LDR and the evolution there, the de-dollarization of loans and the re-dollarization of deposits. I realize it's premature, perhaps, to call a stabilization, but this was the first quarter in some time, one of the few quarters in the past few years where you actually saw a decline. Can you talk about this ratio a little bit more, what you see as the cross currents, how volatility in the market, the expectation that currency may still weaken, impacts that? Conversely, are you seeing pension funds already swapped out of local currency deposits into dollar deposits? What are your expectations? Do you think we're near the end of this, and is there a local currency LDR ratio that you feel uncomfortable with that would precipitate you to be more aggressive in terms of raising funding costs? The second question is a little bit more on the global backdrop and how we should think about it. It's a broader question, especially given the ample market volatility. We've seen concerns about China. How should we be thinking about the transmission mechanisms of a difficult macroeconomic backdrop into your business, whether it be through confidence, exposure to specific sectors, impact on economic growth? How do you think about a difficult economic backdrop, even a hard landing in China, and what it means for your business and how you run it?
Okay, thank you. So, first on your de-dollarization question, as we have talked now for some months, you have seen what happened during the last quarter, and we are, in terms of the loan-to-deposit ratio, we have improved a little bit. We are around 103%. What I can tell you is that during the last 15 months, we have been around that 100 or 105% in the loan-to-deposit ratio, in the combined one, and we plan to stay just where we are. So we don't see any particular difference in the coming months. However, if we talk about local currency loan-to-deposit ratio, yes, we are in the 140s, the 150s, but as we have talked many times, we are under a very constructive relationship with the central bank, and all the financial institutions of the central bank are working out this project, and we'll continue to do that. That's what we get from them. And if the exchange rate stabilizes a little bit, and we don't know what's going to happen, you never know what's going to happen with the exchange rate, but if it stabilizes a little bit, our feeling is that we will, in a way, balance a little bit our loan-to-deposit ratio in local and foreign currency. So we don't see, actually, from what we talked some months ago, which is a much better situation in terms of that ratio and in terms of that particular situation. Then on your question about China and what can happen if China brings more volatility to the market, to the prices of commodities, yes, we don't know what's going to happen with China. What we know is that when they say that they are going to grow 7, they grow 6.9. So they continue to really reach their targets all the time. Now their target is that they will grow from 6.5 to 7. If that happens, we are going to do fine. There are good things that have happened in Peru in the last month, especially the coming into production of many important copper mines. Our output of copper has doubled, and it will double from what we had in 2014 to 2017. So our trade balance, and this December was the first month when our trade balance was a positive balance for many months, despite the prices of commodities, because of these projects that have come into production. Those projects will reach full production at the end of this year. So we don't see anything special happening there in terms of our trade balance, in terms of our current account balance, and those are really the hard facts that we have to really follow. If that happens, I feel that our country will continue growing. It is still growth. I mean, 3.2% is still growth. If it is better than that, fantastic. But 3.2% is still growth in a transitional year with a presidential change. So we feel that the bank will continue growing and there will be no important influence in the deterioration of loans.
Okay, great. Is there a belt local currency LDR ratio you feel uncomfortable crossing that precipitate higher funding costs?
I wouldn't like to give a guidance on that. What I can tell you is that on a combined basis, our roof, our ceiling is 120%, and we are very comfortable because we are at 103%.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Ernesto Gabilondo from Bank of America.
Hi, good morning, and thanks for taking my call. Could you repeat your guidance in terms of loan growth, and what are you expecting in terms of net earnings growth in 2016? Secondly, I will appreciate if you can share your expectations related to the presidential elections, the currency devaluation, and the possible downgrade of Peru to frontier market. I think any details will be very helpful. And finally, although there are no investments in mining, what can we expect in other infrastructure projects such as the airport, metro, gas pipeline, all those that could support the growth of Peru's GDP? Do you think the presidential elections could be delaying infrastructure projects and consumption and then improving in the medium term? Thank you.
Thank you for your questions. In terms of guidance for loan growth, we will be at around 13-15%. Nominal growth. What else? In terms of net earnings, what I can tell you is that our target continues to be 20% ROE for Credicorp. And that's really the guidance we give in terms of earnings. In terms of the presidential election, as typically in Peru, we have a front runner, which is Keiko Fujimori, the daughter of former President Fujimori. She has around 35% of the vote. And then the second candidate, we don't really have a second one because there are like three candidates that share 10% each. But there are, in Peru, 2 months is a long time, and the elections are in April 10th, the 10th. So we too are looking at what's going on. Our feeling is that Keiko and somebody else would go into a second round of elections in June, but we don't know right now who's going to be the second one. What we feel is that the ones running are really market-oriented. One are more market-oriented than others, but we don't have the typical populist candidate coming from the left. So we feel pretty safe that we will get a good president, someone that will be really market-oriented. What we feel, and then you asked a little bit about the evaluation of frontier markets. In terms of evaluation, last year had a duration of 14.5%. This year it's probably going to be around, 10-12%, depending on what happens, especially now in the U.S., because the U.S. seemed to come along pretty strong, and now we don't know. I mean, Janet Yellen is going to talk in the Congress tomorrow. We feel that the pace of increase in the interest rate, in the Fed funds interest rate, would not be as fast as we thought 3 months ago. So we'll see what happens to the dollar. I mean, the dollar appreciated against the other currencies last year 9%, and against the sol only 14%. So we'll see. It really depends more on the dollar than on the sol itself. In terms of frontier market, as you know, there was a very important push both from the private sector and also from the government. And we talked to the MSCI and are pretty close to them and are really trying to put our act together also in Peru. working with some other companies to let these companies increase really their pace and their importance and be able to have more than three companies in the emerging market arena. We don't know exactly what's going to happen, but what I can tell you is that we are working, we are doing our job to try to continue to be an emerging market rather than a frontier market. Then, on your last question in terms of infrastructure projects and its impact on GDP, right now, as you know, last year was not a great year in terms of public investment. However, the base improved importantly in the last quarter. There are some important infrastructure projects being under construction now, but we feel that this pace has to really speed up. We feel that the next government will come with an important package of reforms, both in terms of political reforms and in terms of projects that should really come into construction and in place in the coming, say, 3-4 years. They will really need to move the machinery much faster than it is moving now. Peru has important a lack of infrastructure in terms of roads, highways, ports, airports, the metro system in Lima. So there is ample room for improvement and construction, and that will evidently have an impact in the GDP. What I can tell you is that now, in terms of investment, private investment accounts for 80% of investment, and it's very productive, and 20% of investment comes from state-owned and government institutions. That should really increase its pace in the future.
Great. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Jason Mullen from Scotiabank.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity to ask a question. My general questions have been asked, but maybe I could be a bit more specific. You did mention on the efficiency side the improvement we saw in full year 2015, 200 basis points improvement in the efficiency ratio to 43.3%. What are you doing, what are you continuing to do to improve that ratio going forward? What should we expect this year? And specifically on Credit Corp's portfolio diversification, can you provide an update on what percentage of the loan book is with the largest borrower, perhaps the largest 5 and 10 borrowers, and how has this concentration changed, perhaps in terms of size and if there's been any material change in terms of sector exposure? And maybe just lastly, the general question, we've seen some...
Okay. First, in terms of efficiency, what I can tell you is that we have really been concentrated more in BTP in terms of efficiency. Our cost-to-income ratio in BTP has come down from the low 50s to the low 40s in 3-4 years. We think that we have reached already a position that is very safe. However, we want to go further down and try to reach the 40 or even less than that in the coming 2 years, 3 years. That in terms of BCP. Now, what we plan to do is really what we have learned at BCP, and we have a very good group of people that understand what to do with efficiency, we will go into the other subsidiaries of Credit Corp. First, we will go into Pacifico Prima and some of its subsidiaries, and we will leave Mibanco maybe for 2017, because as you know, Mibanco is under under a transition process. The merger took place only in March last year, which has only been a year, really. And this year, there are other things to do and to prioritize before going into efficiency thoroughly. But we have the lessons learned, we have the people prepared, and we have the culture already built in the whole credit court to continue with this efficiency effort. So we feel pretty confident that we'll reach the targets we plan to reach in that arena. In terms of portfolio diversification, if you go to page 5 of the presentation, you can see what our segments account for. And you see that wholesale banking is 45% of loans, SME is business is 4, then SME PM is 8, and you see all the other segments. What we plan this year is to continue. Last year, the wholesale grew faster than the retail. But this year, we think that it's going to be a more balanced growth in terms of, and retail will pick up a little bit. Vivanco will also begin growing faster. So it will be a more balanced growth. If we talk about concentration of what percentage is concentrated in our most important 10 clients, I don't know specifically the figures. But you can, we are going to publish the 20F in 2 months' time, and you can go there for the last one we published and for the next one and really go in detail in that particular point. Then, in terms of regulation, first we're going to talk a little bit about banking regulation. Nothing important is going to change in this year because the authorities are going to change at the middle of the year. The only thing that the superintendency is working on is a regulation that will resemble Basel III, especially in terms of capital requirements. They will probably publish it at the end of this quarter. We are really working with them. It will really resemble Basel III. But as you know, we are already working under Basel III standards. So we will be really no change in terms of what we are doing. Then you ask a little bit at the pension funds regulation. There is, as you know, a very open discussion of what's going to happen with the pension fund. It is now really in the political arena to decide if it's going to be a pension system or if it's going to be a savings system. Until now, it is a pension system because when you really become 65, you begin to get your pension until you die. But if it becomes a saving system, you will get, you will have a liquidity event at that time, and we are really preparing all credit for really the bank, BFP, and our insurance company to be able to be part of that liquidity event that our clients will have when they become 65. But that is under a political road now. We will see what happens. And that's really the answer for regulation.
That. Thank you for your detailed answer. Maybe just some color. You mentioned the segment breakdown that we saw in the presentation, but what about in terms of sectors, mining, fishing? Have your largest exposures changed?
Not particularly. What I can tell you, and this is a very precise question, is that in terms of the Nino, you are probably worried a little bit about if we are in agriculture or if we are in fishing. Those are the two sectors that can become impacted by the Niño, and we are really not that exposed. Agriculture is only 1% of our portfolio, and fishing is even less than 1%. So we are really not exposed. We were preparing for many months and even years for this to happen, and we are, there will be no problem.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Thank you. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 at this time. Again, that is star 1 if you would like to ask a question. Our next question comes from Victor Galliano from Barclays.
Thanks very much. Just a quick follow-up for me. My main questions have been answered. But just looking at the breakdown of the dollar loan book and your stock of dollar loans, clearly the segments have performed very differently over the last year in terms of growth of those stocks. And what we see is, you know, in absolute terms, there are some of those that are not really coming down very much. And when you look in particular at SME business, although that only grew in dollar terms, I think it was 2% year on year, it's still growing. You know, SME BME is coming down. And also we saw the credit card balances increase. Although they're low in absolute terms, they were growing at about 22% annualized. So can you give us some idea here of you know, why these performances are so different, why, you know, the SME business balances continue to grow, SME BME is coming down, and why we also saw that, you know, I think big increase in the credit card balances as well, whereas the others tend to come down.
What I can tell you in terms of SME is that there are really two different segments. As you said, SME PYME, which encompasses both SME and micro lending, has been a really flat segment for the past 18 months. It's been flat for many reasons, but it was really a deliberate move by financial entities also, because there was risk in that segment. So we decided that we didn't want to grow as we did in the past. I think that was really a good decision. It's been flat. We've been working with our clients. We feel that it will pick up a little bit, but it won't be growing fast. It won't be growing by 15-20%. It will probably grow less than that. And that will continue. You know, if the economy picks up a little bit in terms of growth, and it, instead of growing 3%, it grows 4%, we will see that a very positive influence in the SME payment segment. But if we talk about the SME business segment, which are companies that are a little larger and more formalized than the SME payment companies, that segment has been growing faster. And it's a segment that we like a lot. We've been investing in that segment for many months now in terms of understanding risk, in terms of the models to not only underwrite, but also to collect, in terms of data, in terms of getting very much more closer to our clients. We feel that that particular segment is a very attractive one, and we will continue to try to grow there. I don't know if that answers your question.
Well, I suppose let me ask my question a different way, which is you still have in the SME business, you still have 56% of the loans in foreign currency. I mean, do these firms have that sort of a hedge naturally, or are they exposed to the sol depreciation here?
To be very transparent, we would like that proportion to be much less than 44. And we've been working actively with our clients in those terms. The thing is that some of our clients continue to make their income in dollars. Part of this economy is really pegged to the dollar, and some of these clients make part of their income in dollars, so they don't want to change. And the other, yes, some of them feel that the rates in dollar are lower than rates in soles, and they, in a way, take their own risk. However, there is still room in our hands and room in terms of what's going to happen with regulation to bring these clients more into solids. That's really something we should continue to be doing.
Okay, okay. So you're going to bring that level down from the 56%, which is in foreign currency.
We're going to try. Remember, we work in a competition. These clients, you know, have other banks. There is a competitive arena here.
Yeah, understood. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Saul Martinez with J.P. Morgan.
Hi, just a couple of quick follow-ups on asset quality, and I think it's something of a follow-up to the previous question, but from a different angle. You're growing very rapidly in credit card in a slow economic growth environment, and NPLs did go up sequentially. I apologize if you addressed this during the presentation, because you posted the presentation a little bit late on the website, but how should we be concerned about this? It does imply that NPL formation in this segment is increasing, and why should we be comfortable that we don't see what we saw a few years ago when you did see more ample deterioration in your credit card book? And secondly, do you know offhand how much of the increase in the NPLs came from the two cases you mentioned in BMET business? How much were those two cases, and how much did they impact the NPL ratio?
Can you elaborate on your second question
You mentioned in your release that the BMET business segment, there were two specific cases that impacted your NPLs. Do you know how much those specific cases were for, so we can kind of normalize or think about what the impact of those two cases were on the NPL ratio?
First on your asset quality question, we learn from our lessons, and yes, we have lessons that we learned 3-4 years ago, and we have put our best people, our best efforts to try to understand risk, to be able to underwrite, and to be able to collect better than others. So now we feel that if the country continues, as I said, if the country continues to grow by 3% a year, we won't have the same experiences we had some years ago. We feel in a better, much better stance in terms of the models we have, scoring models, but also the collection models. So we are very much more prepared. We have a better culture in terms of people that work in risk, that work with our clients in the commercial side. So we don't feel that we're going to have the same experience. Then those two specific cases account for 60%. We are going to get back to you with some more detail, but that is around 60% of what happened in the SME business line for this quarter.
Okay, so in other words, 60% of the increase in BMET business came from those two specific cases.
Two particular clients, yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. At this time, I'm showing no further questions. So I'd like to turn the call back over to Mr. Walter Bailey, Credit Corp's Chief Operating Officer, for final remarks.
Good morning to all of you. Thank you very much for being with us throughout the year in this particular call. If one takes a step back and looks at the year, clearly we have seen something that appears to be contradictory, which is the Peruvian economy slowing down, a lot of volatility in the world, and nevertheless, record earnings at Credicorp. And somehow what has happened this year is that we have benefited from initiatives that we started approximately 2 years ago. One is related to efficiency, and we've talked about that quite a while in detail. And, that is an effort that started 2 years ago, as I mentioned. We have had some very good results. Obviously, the first impact is faster. Now we have to do the hard things that take a little bit more time, but we're extremely focused on that. And the second element that has benefited our results this year is clearly risk management. We are comfortable with our risk management practices, particularly as they relate to the retail side. We have seen a good growth, particularly in the consumer credit card. The dynamic there was at the beginning of the year. One of our competitors, particularly Citibank, started to sell its own portfolio. So we decided to, rather than buy it, go after some of those customers. As some of you know, we have a lot of publicly available information provided by the superintendents as to who the borrowers are. And rather than paying a premium, we started a very aggressive campaign at the upper end, at the wealthiest, the customers that have the highest balances. We were extremely successful. Obviously, when one does a campaign such as that, good comes with that, but it is all within the risk parameters that we had originally established. So again, we're benefiting from efficiency and risk management, which allow us to even grow in a year in which there was an economy that was slowing down and volatility. Other good things worth mentioning from the year that just finished is the merger of Mibanco. Putting together two financial institutions always has complications, not only in terms of systems, culture, sales, methods, methodologies, etc. Frankly, we're very comfortable with what we've done. The fact that it was not a very aggressive market and we did not push our sales force gave us a little bit more space to try to integrate and do things without a lot of competitive pressure. But nevertheless, we think we're on the right track, and acquiring Mibanco and merging it with Verificar, we think will become a very strong contributor to Credicorp's revenues going forward. The association with Banmedica, very, very valuable to us in terms of realizing that we do not necessarily have, the learning curve to be able to reach the required levels of profitability was a tough one for us. And the association with Banmedica, who's proven to be a very good partner, is probably going to help us achieve the required returns in a faster time frame. We are also comfortable with Credicorp Capital. We think it's gone through its inflection point. It's been a complicated journey so far. We acquired at the peak of the Latin America boom, if you will. We paid prices that clearly, reflected a different perspective of what's going to happen in the future. We've had some difficulties in integrating the companies, but we are very comfortable that the inflection point is way beyond us. And this last impairment, which we did, was, I think, mostly 80% driven by changes in the tax law in Chile. It does not reflect the actual dynamics of the business. The business has gained market share, is very well positioned in a period where our competitors are withdrawing. Some of the large international banks and even some of the regional banks have had difficulties and are withdrawing, and those are the spaces that we need to take now. When international players withdraw is where us that are committed to this region have the opportunity to capture some of the spaces, and this is a very strategic business for us. Challenges in this year: the continued review of the portfolio of businesses at Credicorp. We have businesses that are still not performing or are underperforming. We have to work and do the strategic reviews and keep pushing those businesses to obtain the results that we want them to. Mibanco, we have a challenge there. Mibanco was merged into Edificar with Edificar. And Edificar has the culture of being a monoline, a single product. It only offered microfinance loans to a single segment, microfinance. Mibanco is now a multi-segment bank that goes into small businesses and microfinance, and it offers a larger array of products in terms of deposits, transactional services, etc., etc. So we have to beef up that organization in order to fully capture the benefit of having built the fifth largest bank in the country. As somebody mentioned, there's a challenge related to regulation on the pension/insurance business. We have had a test of what could happen, which is that, as you might know, the law was approved by Congress, observed or not approved by the executive branch, and it's pending discussion in Congress in March. but there's already a high level of uncertainty, and where it does impact is on the annuities business, where the volume has dropped 50% where it was prior to this regulation. So maybe that's the test of things to come on the annuity business. Nevertheless, as Fernando mentioned, what we see going forward is that our customers, when they reach the 65 years, they will have, as Fernando described, an event of liquidity. And clearly the only thing that is not going to happen is that they take the money in cash. So we have to be able to put in front of our customers a set of products that suits their individual needs, be that mutual funds, time deposits, insurance products, health, life, and or all sorts of investment products from Credicorp. So we have the franchise to be able to capture those funds and offer services to our customers that suit their individual needs. A lot has been mentioned throughout the year on the loan-to-deposit ratio. That is clearly something we are all watching. We have seen an improvement in the last quarter. My gut feeling is that it's basically driven by the fact that the government started to spend some more money. And as you might have recalled, the government has a substantial amount of money deposited at the central bank. To the extent that they are running deficits, that money has to leave the central bank and flows into the system. We think that that dynamic will start to happen once we have a new president. We have been in meetings with all the candidates, and the only thing they have in common, or one of the few things they have in common, is that they all want to beef up or expedite investments in infrastructure. So we think that that money saved at the central bank will flow back into the system, and we will see some more solids floating around. We see going forward this year kind of two time frames. One is the first 6 months in which volatility will continue because of China, interest rates, El Nino, and elections. But a second half of the year where fundamentals, we hope, will start to kick in, where we will find a country that does not have a serious inflation problem, deficit problem, financial system is healthy, there is no over-leverage either at the government or the private sector, and a lot of opportunities to continue to catch up. So we think that fundamentals will start to kick in the second half of the year, and we will have a year in which we will grow at 3%, which is below our potential, but nevertheless it is growth. And of course, at that time, Credicorp continues to be very well prepared to capture growth in the fundamentals in this economy. Again, we thank you very much for your continued support and attention and being with us throughout this year, and we hope to deliver to you a solid first quarter for this current year. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect.